Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay, and welcome to the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexity of marriages between straight women to gay men. Each week, my guests and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. If you have any comments that you'd like to make during this broadcast, you can either call them in at area code 646-716-4893, or you can email me at bonkaye@aol.com. Tonight we have a very special night because it's always special when I have Dr. Brian Hooper here. Hi, Brian.
Hey, Bonnie. Good to be with you.
Well, it's always wonderful to have you here, and we're hoping that we're going to have another guest joining us shortly, Wayne Besson. And Wayne is the founder of Truth Wins Out, which is the organization that's been fighting against all kinds of discrimination, with gays being stuck being part of the ex-gay ministry. I mean, he's really had a very hard fight along the way trying to expose these organizations that tell people that you can pray away the gay and that, you know, you can change if you really try to change. And you're familiar with all of that, right, Brian?
I'm quite familiar with it. Yep. A number of my clients have been through that and had the wounds to tell about, too.
I know. It's so sad how people struggle so much in their lives. And for what? Based on the ignorance of others, right?
Right, and trying to please other people rather than being themselves with integrity.
I think it's hard when you grow up in a community that where this is not even something that you can discuss, that you're told from the beginning that if you are gay, well, then you're going to hell.
Right.
And
well, and
that this is something you can choose.
And even if it's not that blatant, that, you know, going to hell business, there are all those subtle cues that say, don't tell us, disown that part of yourself, we don't want to know anything about it. If you want to get ahead, you won't embrace who you are. You know, so it gets guys in lots of trouble, and sometimes they don't even realize the extent to which they're pushing that down until they're stuck in a marriage where they realize they shouldn't have gotten themselves, you know, because they were trying to please everybody else.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. I was having a conversation with a friend of mine the other day who's, you know, a gay man who's a little bit older than me. And he's certainly out in his life. I mean, he's not hiding anything. He was married, had family. But he also grew up in a very strict kind of Baptist home where gay was not one of, Southern Baptist, where gay was not one of those options. And so, of course, he fought it for years. And, of course, he tried everything and prayed and prayed and prayed. And he tried every kind of therapy. Nothing was working because it is, you know, what it is. But it was interesting, I thought, that I had sent him a video. It was a video, it was supposed to be a takeoff on that show, you know, My Husband's Not Gay. Mm-hmm. And somebody did a cute video called My Husband's Not Straight. And instead of My Husband's Not Gay, My Husband's Not Straight. And, you know, men who are married, and one's pretending to be straight and be gay when he's really straight. You know, it's like a kind of comical kind of video. And, you know, I thought he might, you know, enjoy watching that, but he was very offended by it. And I thought it was interesting why he was offended by it, because he was offended by the stereotype of gay that they were showing, which is someone who's like a feminine or someone who's, you know, camping it up. And he said, this is not the kind of gay that, you know, I approve of or that I am. And I think it makes it look bad for others. And I was thinking to myself, you know, that was really an interesting thought that he brought up, because I think this is what so many gay people do struggle with. It's the stereotype of, you know, who they see on television, of who they're hearing about as gay. And when you see, like, straight eye for queer guys with straight eyes, whatever the case is, and you see all that kind of camp up kind of stuff that they do, that this really turns off a lot of gay men who say, well, that's not me. I'm not like that. Mm-hmm. You know, like an embarrassment.
But the other side of it is that, you know, there's a whole spectrum of gender conformity, from being very sort of stereotypically macho to very effeminate. And what we as a society need to get over is trying to make people be one place or another and just accept that everybody's going to be someplace on that spectrum. Let's love them as they are, for who they are. You know, because some people do, that's who they are. They're kind of effeminate, and some are very hyper macho, and they're not trying to put anything on. It's just who they are. So what I'm hearing is that even within the gay community, there's still a lot of homophobia and fear of the variety.
Yes,
of them.
I think that's the case, and I think I can understand it, because I was talking to you a little bit about this before, you know, being Jewish. You know, I grew up in a generation that was really facing persecution. I'm in the aftermath of the Holocaust, and...
Right. Yep.
You know, I grew up in that environment, and a lot of people, you know, just didn't want to be identified. They were scared, or they were trying to fit into society. They changed their names. Some of them changed their looks, and some of them just didn't want to be identified with people who were stereotypically Jewish, you know, by the way they spoke or by the way they acted, you know, as far as, you know, culturally. And I thought that was really sad, you know, where people would have to try to not be who they are, and they're afraid, and they don't want to be around people who might, you know, represent who they are, because they feel a sense of embarrassment. And I guess for gay people, it's certainly the same thing, which is the only reason I can think of why I see other gay men doing this too, you know, as far as knocking men who may seem effeminate or, you know, maybe dressing up or whatever the case is, and they say, that's not me, and I don't want people to think that's what I am.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just because you're gay doesn't mean you have to be, you know, feminine, swishy, and dressing up. And all the stereotypes, I guess that's what it comes down to. Nobody wants to fit into that stereotype when people are sitting and condemning the stereotype.
Right.
So
right.
I think that is, I think that's common to everyone.
I think we need to give up the condemnation, and then we need to be who mm-hmm. we are without apology, you know, so wherever people are.
I know, it's a very sad commentary on things that, but, I mean, I do understand it's human nature. I mean, it's just like I know that it's any nationality, any race. You know, I know Italian people feel embarrassed by the mafia. Or, you know, I know African-Americans who feel embarrassed by, you know, rappers who are rapping gang rap, you know, and that's certainly not what they're about. And they
right.
feel that then it's a condemnation on all people. Or when
right.
you have Latino people and they look at the gangs in California, you know, who are take over the corners and control and the violence. You know, they don't want to be associated with that either because they think, you know, we have it rough enough as a minority and we're giving people the food that they need or the fuel they need to make us feel less, you know, than we are. We're already feeling bad about who we are in society. But anyway, I think Wayne is with us, so let me just hold on 1 second. Wayne, is that you?
Yeah. It is.
Hi, Wayne. It's Bonnie and Ryan Hooper, who's my
co-host
every
are
month.
You?
And so we're so happy to have you here with us to talk a little
yeah,
bit about all
on.
The wonderful
Thanks
work
for...
you do.
Likewise.
Thank you, Wayne. You know, Dr. Hooper has been doing the show with me for several years, you know, once a month, and he's a therapist. He's in Tennessee, and he's gay, and he's very proud of, you know, who he is, and he really works with a lot of not only the men who are married to the women, you know, part of my support network and coming out issues, but he's really healing for a lot of the women who are going through this, much like you are, and trying to let women know that, you know, this is not something that they should, you know, take personally. This is something that they got, you know, caught up in, that they didn't know ahead of time, and to try to get them to heal because they're so damaged after these marriages. But we were just talking, I don't know if you could say something about this, about the stereotypes that some gay men feel. And I was explaining that, you know, I come from a Jewish family, and a lot of times growing up, people are trying to hide who they were because I grew up in the aftermath of the Holocaust, and people didn't want to be identified with being Jewish. They would change their names. It was, you know, you could do that. And with gay people, sometimes I find that gay men are very homophobic towards other kinds of gay men who may be effeminate or who may, you know, portray themselves to be the stereotypical television kind of gay, like Paul Lynde was. And they feel like, that's not who I am. That's not, you know, so I don't want to say that I'm like that. I don't want to say I'm gay. Well, you're saying it's a shame that people just can't accept who they are and be open to everybody, you know, when you're part of a minority. Do you find that to be, have you found that in your travels?
Well,
internal
I think
homophobia?
Wherever there's been prejudice and discrimination against any
mm-hmm.
many different groups, and you mentioned with Jewish people, and that's my background as well, but you can go in every, you know, different group imaginable, and people, whether
that's
it's
what I was saying,
trying to
even
change,
with
like,
blacks
yeah,
and Spanish people, they don't want to be associated with the gangs, and black people look on
well,
the rappers as somebody who's making them look bad. That's, I think, with every minority, right?
But, I mean, it goes even further. I mean, you have a lot of, you know, black people who have dyed their skin, for example, to fit in. And
mm-hmm.
in certain countries, that's actually very, very common. The Dominican Republic comes to mind. But I think that people want to fit in generally, and will take extraordinary measures to do so, to avoid discrimination, to avoid the pressure that comes with it. I think in terms of gay men, those who can pass often feel threatened by being around someone who
exactly.
can't, because it provokes comments that they may hear, makes them very uncomfortable. In fact, they can get through life to some extent without that type of pressure, but when they're with someone who can't pass, suddenly they have to face up to the bigotry and discrimination that exists, and that can be very uncomfortable. So they try to fight against, instead of defending and saying, well, there's nothing wrong, and humanity is on a large spectrum, and we should celebrate everyone and be okay with it, and who they are. Instead, they have the opposite reaction, and they think, you know, if I just attack my own because they are different, that will make the majority like me more if I do their bidding for them. And fortunately, it doesn't actually get respect for people who do that. They look at it as pathetic, and they can go with any minority that turns their back on their own to gain personal acceptance, and you know, nobody really respects that.
Well, no, it's just so sad, you know, because I did see it.
I think that's an excellent analysis. I think that's an excellent analysis, Wayne. You've really summarized it well.
Well, thanks.
You're like a hero to me because you have, you know, during times that, you know, really adverse to publicity and everything else, you didn't care. You stood up and you said, this is what I am, and this is who I am, and this is who I'm going to be, and this is what I'm going to fight for. And I'm not going to let people tell me that there's something wrong with who I am. And you became such a great advocate and activist against the odds. I'm sure it couldn't have been easy when you started out, because you've been doing this for a while. When you started out, it was still not great.
Yeah, I came out in 1988, and told my parents I just graduated high school. And they freaked out for a couple of years, and it was very difficult. We were a close family. And took them about 2 years to be accepting now, and ever since then they've been just remarkable. I mean, it could not be better, and advocates themselves. But there was a lot of pressure. For example, I started my first LGBT organization when I was in college at University of Florida. We would get alumni of colleges to take out full-page ads in college newspapers to say it with headlines such as, "Your gay and lesbian friends welcome you back to school." And these alumni would sponsor these ads everywhere from Harvard to Ole Miss in Oxford, Mississippi, which caused a big stir. And, you know, I was told, I was going into journalism at the time, TV broadcasting, and I was told, you know, journalists can't be part of the story. You have to make a decision on your career. You can't do both. And I, you know, had to make a decision, basically. And I decided I was going to dedicate myself to advocacy. My parents, not because they cared about being gay anymore, but they were afraid I was going to throw away my career, were a little upset. But, you know, they've, again, been my biggest supporters along the way. But it was quite a risk in terms of for that. And there was also so much homophobia at the beginning. I started getting involved
with the AIDS generation there too, right?
Well, yeah, we
in the
would
midst
walk
of the whole
classes
AIDS
at
epidemic.
University. Yeah, that was part of it, and we would walk into classrooms at the University of Florida, and we'd be on panels, and these young people would laugh at us when we came in, and if we were effective of what we did by answering their questions and talking, they'd shake our hands when we left, and I saw the power and advocacy from those experiences, and I was hooked. When I saw it, you could change people's minds, and there was ability to create a lasting change and make sure that we were the last generation that had to experience such homophobia. I mean, what else would I want to spend my life doing? I mean, I was hooked. It was just a beautiful thing to watch when the light bulb would go on, and you could see the people thinking and the change occur in front of your eyes.
I know that because of efforts like yours, you know, my nephew, who's going to be 21 next month, he goes to school in Trenton, you know, Trenton University, and he's the head of their LBG, you know, movement. He's, you know, they voted him in as president. So, you know, he wouldn't maybe 20 years ago not be able to do something like that. But now that he's, you know, because of all the footwork you've done to bring this out, you know, it's easy. I mean, he's making his major gender studies now. But,
yeah,
you know,
I mean,
like I say, it was hard for him to come out, but he's out there, and he's the head of the organization in Trenton State. So I'm really proud of him that, you know, he was able to do that because of someone like you who really fought for that.
Yeah, you know, and I built my career off the backs of people who had it much worse than I did. Those, it's Stonewall. who fought the advocates who fought against Anita Bryant's Save the Children campaign. And I look back even beyond, before that, you had Frank Kameny, who was an advocate in Washington, D.C. He was out there in front of the White House in the 1950s protesting after he was fired for being gay from a government job. I mean, you know, if I was doing that in 1988, I couldn't imagine doing it in 1950. And even before that, in the 1850s, you had some activists in, for example, Germany in the 1850s that were, I mean, centuries ahead of their time, fighting to overturn what would become paragraph 175, which outlawed intimacy between men. So I think we all build on those before us and try to make it better. And I think that there's going to be those that come after us and do an incredible job of moving the ball forward. Because one thing I think, there's no finish line. You know, when I was young, I thought there was. There isn't a finish line, whether it's racism, anti-Semitism, homophobia. It's a constant battle forever and ever and ever. All you can do is take the ball as far as you can and hand it to the next generation to keep that fight going, because the moment you let up, you can these ugly pathologies creep up again. And so it's a never-ending battle. And I think, you know, myself and you, Bonnie, I mean, you're doing exactly the same thing. You've been a hero and a warrior out there, just moving the ball forward and making sure things are better and people don't have to go through the situation that you went through. I'm trying to make sure the next generation doesn't have to go what I went through. That's all we can do. But it's an honor to be a part of that, because, you know, when you can help somebody, and you've helped thousands of people, what could be greater than that? I mean, that's very rewarding for me, and I'm sure for you as well.
It is. It keeps me really focused. But, you know, the one thing I wanted to bring up to you, because this is, you know, something that we both fight for, is honesty, integrity, and truth. And the one issue that we've both been working on a lot lately is the show from the Learning Channel, You Know My Husband Isn't Gay. And, you know, it really is upsetting to me that with all the progress that we've made, it takes still a show like this that makes national publicity, where men who have what they call same-sex attractions are not gay. I mean, how do you deal with this? Because I find it just very upsetting.
I think I deal with it by trying not to get upset anymore and just realize that it comes with the territory. There's always going to be an outburst of ignorance that pops up, an eruption of stupidity. And all we can do is take a deep breath and fight and try to get our message out there and educate as many people as possible and stand up. And that's all we can do. And there is no finish line, because it's a never-ending process, we just have to roll with it, you know. And there are times when you just have to roll your eyes and go, again, I can't believe this garbage is out there and it's still going on. But it is, so you just, you know, get up and roll up your sleeves and get
back. Don't you think it gives a bad message to everybody, first of all, to women, that, you know, if you try hard enough, you can live with a gay man, and to gay men, well, you could be gay and get married as long as you just keep it attractions and don't act on it. I mean, and I just don't get that whole thinking. And it's not just for Mormons. I mean, there's plenty of people who think like that.
Yeah, it's an atrocious message. It's incredibly damaging. And I think it's a lie. I mean, anybody who's been in a relationship knows how difficult, even under the best of circumstances, keeping a dating, whether it be a dating situation or and specifically a marriage, keeping it together, two people staying together for a long period of time. I mean, that's a lot of work. And under the best circumstances, it can be a challenge over the long term. And then when you throw in the fact that one of the two partners has no attraction to the other in most of these cases, and in some cases may find their opposite sex partner sexually repulsive, and I think that came through to me in some of the characters in that show, the chances of that working are are really slim. And even the definition of working, even if they stay together, it's hard to have that as a success story when the pain and misery, isolation and loneliness that's probably involved in these relationships when the camera lights go off, it must be immeasurable, the pain. And so I think that to try to glamorize these situations and build it to something that it's not, it's reckless, it's irresponsible, and I think it's just a recipe for hurting a lot of people.
I think you're absolutely right, and I know that I don't believe the show is being renewed. Am I right with that?
What's that?
I heard the show was not going to be renewed.
No, it was a one-time deal. The problem is they'll replay it to get their money's worth out of it, so they'll show it again. I mean, on the plus side, the characters in this, they were real people, but they were so openly gay and cruising men while their wives are around and trying to get away from their wives half the time to have these bizarre sleepovers with each other and camping, Brokeback Mountain style camping events, that I don't think it was as effective an advertisement for these programs as they had hoped, because these men didn't look very convincing. And I thought the wives looked as if they were taught their needs weren't as important. And it was kind of sad for the wives, and it was sad for the men involved. I mean, they will certainly do some damage, but I think a lot of people will look at it and go, wow, their guys are still kind of gay. And a lot of parents will say, you know, I'm not convinced. I don't think I'd want my daughter to marry one of those guys. So I think that it could have been worse had it been more persuasive, but I think they just seemed like a bunch of it made it look like sexual oppression just makes you think of nothing but sex, because that's what the entire show was about, these guys looking at other guys that they desperately want to be with, and then you had their poor wives policing their genitals, frankly, for an hour, and I thought it looked utterly ridiculous and absurd. And I think if that's what they're advertising, it doesn't look like the kind of relationship I think most people would want to be in. But again, because of religious pressure, there are those who will follow in their footsteps and will be damaged by it. And then they'll be going to you to pick up the pieces.
Well, unless they get to somebody like Joe Court first, or, you know, someone who's going to convince them that they can still have gay sex but not be gay.
That's
amazing to me. And then, I don't know if I sent you the article, if you saw this article about five reasons having a gay husband is actually a good thing by Rick Clemens. Did you see that article?
Yeah, it's ridiculous, and it's also homophobic because, you know, none of these, you never see an article for some idiot like that who says, five reasons why a dude marrying his best friend who he's not attracted to and leaving his wife's a good thing. I mean, you'd never see that. Like, hey, you know, you get along with your guy friend really well. You guys like to watch football games together and call each other dude and go out there and why don't you just forget women, marry each other? You don't need sex. I mean, you'd never see that. But the fact it's like a man and a woman and a wife, it's like, oh, okay, that's fine. But, you know, it would be preposterous for the other way around, or if they said that with two women. You know, forget men. You don't need to be attracted to each other. Get married. There's so much more in common. You could have a great life. I mean, you'd never see that. People would laugh at it, but the fact that they take it seriously with a gay man and a woman marrying, it's pure homophobia to its core.
Exactly.
It's like they're saying the lives of gays and the happiness of gay people don't matter. And, oh, by the way, the lives of women are less than. They don't really need all their needs taken care of as long as they're there for their man to please whatever religious institution it is, whether it's the Mormons or the evangelicals.
Mm-hmm. I know these marriages are so destructive. And, you know, I'm doing an article for my newsletter this month on how they differ than divorces from straight men, because I've been divorced from both. But in a marriage to a gay man, you're with a man who doesn't really want to be with you, who is, you know, sexually rejecting you at all ends, then emotionally rejecting you, and they can't form, you know, a bond with you because you're straight. And, you know, they make you think that it's your fault that everything's going wrong in the marriage. And some of these women just get so beaten down. I mean, I always say to men, if you truly took those vows and loved your wife, you have to be honest and tell her the truth. And I have men say to me, I don't know why I can't just get a divorce. And why does she have to know? Because there are organizations out there telling me not to tell her because I'm going to be taken in court. This is their answer to me. It takes
a
while. I sent them to Brian to break them down from that point because I can't deal with that.
Well, I think that people need to know because the partner is wondering why wasn't my husband interested? What was wrong? And
right, exactly.
That would be, and I think you owe it to that person to ease the burden to them so they can move forward and feel good
mm-hmm.
about themselves and not question and wonder. Anytime there's a breakup, the people involved go through a boarding process when they wonder what they did wrong, what they could have done differently.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's a great, I can imagine being in a situation where the partner is gay, there's a great deal of confusion because there's no logical or rational answer you're going to come up with because your entire perception of that relationship is based upon a lie. It was acting, and you know, and I know it's acting because I dated girls a couple times in middle school and high school, and it was complete
mm-hmm.
nonsense. It was BS. I was an actor playing a role. I was trying to be what society wanted me to be when I was like, you know, 14 and 15, and through a different set of circumstances, you know, that could have been instead of 14 or 15, that could have gone to 24, 34, 44. And I just can't imagine living it so inauthentically for so long, but the partner involved isn't a willing participant in that. I mean, it's cruel, it's mean, and if you really love the person, you just simply can't do that to them. I mean, that's why I told my girlfriend, the first person I told when I was 17, I couldn't play that game. I couldn't lie. I just couldn't do it anymore. I had to tell her because I could, she loved me being a gentleman at first, but you know, after a couple months, it was and she was wondering, you know, what was up, and I just couldn't do it. I just couldn't lie to her or go through the motions.
Wait.
And so she's the first person I came out to. So I feel terrible for anybody who has to do it for an extended period of time. I mean, it's just unfair. It's mean.
Wayne, I just want to ask you this before, you know, I let you go because I appreciate so much you taking the time. I'm under, like, a lot of attack all the time from people because I don't believe in bisexuality. I think that it's a term that's too loosely used when men don't want to come to terms with the fact that they're gay. I really do believe that maybe they think that they're bisexual because they're having sex with their wives, not that it's necessarily that exciting or the preference to them. But because they can, that now, you know, clarifies the fact they must be bisexual. But I just don't believe, I feel that once you cross that line where you're having a man, you know, that it just changes who you are. I don't believe that men have equal preferences for men and women. How do you feel about that?
Well, I'm going to have to disagree with you on that. I don't know if they're equal preferences. There's a lot more evidence of bisexuality scientifically in women than men. But
mm-hmm.
there's a spectrum of sexuality, but you can't change the spectrum you're on. So if you're not attracted to women, marrying a woman is not going to make you attracted to her. It's not going to make you bisexual. It's something that's innate basically, and you're going to feel it or you're not. And, you know, but very rarely is it an equal attraction to one sex or the other, I think the bigger problem is when people don't fall within the spectrum of whether they're attracted to the opposite sex and lie to themselves and say they are, and lie to the person they're getting involved with. I think that's where the disaster comes, when there's no possibility of a good outcome, or it is for a short amount of time, because, you know, I think you mentioned on my show that, you know, when people are younger, they are more easily aroused. They can fool themselves
mm-hmm,
a little longer.
Exactly.
But at the end of the day, if there's not that attraction there, they are going to grow bitter, and they are going to grow resentful, and they are going to want to be who they are. And then they've just wasted not only part of their own life, but they've also wasted the life of the person they purported to love. I mean, it's a cruel hoax what people are doing to each other, mostly in the name of religion. They're living the lives other people want. They're not living their own lives. And if anybody out there finds themselves living the life of somebody else and living their own expectations, I mean, to me, that's the definition of a child. I don't care how old you are. Definition of an adult is somebody who comes to terms with who they are and lives authentically and makes decisions on their own, even if it's going to upset others, and doesn't live the life of other people, but lives their own life. And that's what the different separation of adult and an adolescent is. And and sometimes when you have these people who marry for all these years, I mean, they still haven't entered adulthood in such a way. They haven't separated from what their mommy and daddy wants for them. And I think that's tragic.
It is. I mean, there's a lot of collateral damage with the children. I work with a lot of times with the families, the kids who grow up with this, with the lack of trust in their own relationships, with, being the keeper of the secret for their dads who manipulate them not to tell their mom. There's so many different horrible stories with this.
Bonnie, I think what happens to people is you start out as a young person with enormous pressure to be straight.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
Why some of these guys and women who marry men who are lesbians get into this is because the longer you're playing the game, the harder it is to get out, because the lies start compounding one on top of the other. It starts with one lie where you go on a date, and all of a sudden you construct an entire life that is a false pretense. And you keep digging the hole, and you keep digging it. Next thing you know, you find yourself married. And then I think it's just the lies compound. And then people get terrified once they've dug themselves such a deep hole. How do one day do you just turn around and go, I've got to get out of this hole that I've built? And so they shut down, and they don't get out of the hole. They just keep digging a deeper one. And so that's, I think, the tragedy of it and how people end up in these situations. But I'm glad, via people doing the work like you to warn people, don't do this. This isn't going to end well. There's not a happy ending here. There's no the only happy ending is for this. It's not fairy tale. These are real people with real lives. And you might as well come to grips now rather than later. Uh-huh.
I really do understand the pressure it's brought to bear, and I even believe that almost all gay men who get married do love their wives the best they can, and they think that if they do get married, then they won't have to have those feelings anymore. That if they love someone enough, they can love those feelings away, and for a while it even works. But it's only a matter of time till it resurfaces, and it doesn't go away. It just keeps enhancing.
Yeah, and the other is a purely religious, where people say, I'm gonna live a life of hell on earth so I can get to heaven when I die. I mean, that's basically the deal they're cutting in their minds, even if they don't realize it.
Scary, isn't it?
And so they think,
very scary.
Yeah, they think I can endure, 5 decades of, five, 6 decades of misery and just to grin and bear it, so God's happy with me, and I can spend eternity, with angel wings sitting on a cloud playing a harp. And they're willing to destroy the one life they do have for that promise that they've been taught by their religious background. It
so
is.
Sad.
I mean, just destroying the one life they have and the life
of someone
else.
Even, in Jewish, Orthodoxy, it's the same way. They have the group Jonah. It's in every religion, that does this. And it's a shame.
Yeah.
It just is that people can't be who they are, that they have to fight their whole lives who they are so they can be someone else to please people.
Right. I mean, these religions were based in times when there was a high mortality, right? People didn't live very long, and they were basically reproduce, so we can have a larger, tribe within our religion. And the whole point of, gay people producing was pretty horrifying to them, I would say. And so they just wrote them out of these situations. And so as a result, we've had century upon century of untold misery and destruction and damage and pain and suffering because people, these religious institutions, have promoted a gigantic lie and did not care about the collateral damage of those that were harmed, that the big lie was somehow important to
maintaining their strength of their larger religion and their priorities. And I just, they've got it backward. It's done nothing but hurt people, and it has done nothing to help these religions. And it's time to end this homophobia that leads to this, because until we do, we're just going to ruin more lives and destroy more families.
Mm-hmm. Well, Wayne, I can't thank you enough for joining us and helping us in every way possible and being such a hero to me and to so many others, you know, taking on the battles that nobody else wants to fight and standing out there and doing it day in and day out. And I hope you'll come back again to us.
Anytime.
Several times a year so we can catch up and hear your words of wonderful wisdom. And
that would be great.
Thank you so much.
And thank you so much, because you're the one telling the truth out there. And there's so much propaganda from these gigantic religious right groups trying to get people to live these lies. And you're the one saying, look, don't do this because this is the end result. And
well,
you probably say so many people.
Truth,
you probably,
truth wins out, Wayne, right?
Yeah, well, you probably say
truth will win out.
Yeah, I mean, but you've just saved so many people from having miserable lives instead of having
good lives.
And
I'm very.
You know, we can't put a price on that. I mean, you'll never know how many people you've helped. And thank you for that. And you've been critically important to my work as well. And I cannot.
Well, whenever
you
need me, I'm going to be there. Whenever you need me, you just pick up the phone or send me an email. I'll be there for you.
All right.
All right.
Thank
you, so thank you so much, Wayne. We'll talk to you soon.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Okay. Well, I'm so happy he was able to join us tonight.
Oh, that was wonderful, Bonnie. I'm so glad you could have him on as a guest. He really is well-spoken, articulate. He gets right to the heart of it. I didn't find myself disagreeing with anything he had to say. I was right there with him the whole time.
So was I until we got to the bisexuality issue. But our,
I know.
I have such a hard time convincing people that, you know, once you cross that penis line, it's not straight anymore. But that's okay. Someday
it
that
isn't.
Will win out, too. Well, I think, like I say, if we could just call it P-men, you know, so anybody who's interested in the penis, they don't have to take on
well,
a label of bi or tri or curious or just be a P-man.
Yeah.
Kind of says what
honest,
it is,
though.
Right?
He said it's not, it's very rarely is it equal attraction there. But, I keep coming back to whatever it is to the women who are listening, what did you sign up for? If it's not
exactly.
What you signed up for, you don't have to stay. You don't have to judge it, and you don't have to stay in it either. You know. So there we go. That's the bottom line. Yeah.
Well, yeah, and I think, like I say, Wayne, I really admire him because, you know, he's. I mean, it's one thing to come out like you've come out. It takes a lot of courage, but to go out there and fight for it all the time, you know, takes even a ridiculous amount of courage in a world that. You know, it's not very accepting in many places. You know, it's true that sometimes when you live in a liberal community where people think, well, in New York, what's the big deal? You're gay. But you know what? The whole world's not New York.
That's
and it's
right.
not L.A. You know,
that's
I don't
right.
even know in Tennessee how it is. I can't imagine it's great down there.
No. Nope.
Not from what I see on the show Nashville that I watch very faithfully every week.
Well,
you know, I don't know if you're familiar with that show.
I haven't missed an episode. I'm hooked.
Me either. I love that show.
My guilty pleasure.
Mine too. I just can't resist.
Yeah.
That is my favorite show. But
yeah.
It's they even have that side story in there where they have the gay
right.
singer
right.
married to the woman.
Yep.
And
right.
I think they've portrayed it really great, don't you?
Yeah, I do too. I think they did a good job. Yep.
You know, and if you cannot say he's gay because... Okay.
How easily he manipulated her in order to advance his career and to appear to be straight, and yet it all collapses, and there's damage not only to her, who thought she was marrying a straight man, but also to his own sense of self. And
I know.
Yeah, which is pretty true to real life, you know.
But you also can see that in your part of the world, it would not be a very acceptable thing. If
well,
he were to come out as you know, a gay singer and a cowboy. People really would not go for that.
Not, yeah, especially outside of Nashville proper. Within the city, it's much more inclusive, but don't have to go very far when you're outside the city limits, and then things get, well, things are just not as progressive, again, I'm going to put it that way.
I think that's pretty much a standard answer you could say for pretty much anywhere in the South.
Probably, yep, outside of the major city.
Right. Do you ever feel threatened where you live at all?
No, not where I live. I really don't. But I would be much more guarded in some of the smaller towns beyond the city limits. And there probably would be certain establishments even in town that I wouldn't wear it on my shirt sleeve.
You know, it's interesting what Wayne was saying because it's so true of you. You've told this story before, that when you were younger, you know, you also, you know, dated a few times, right, with a woman?
Yeah, a couple of dates here and there, hardly to speak of, Yeah, because I thought it was the right thing to do, and I thought the feelings would kick in, and I realized, that, you know, before I went to college, they weren't going to kick in, and I'd been praying long enough that if prayer changed anything in this regard, it should have changed, and it hadn't. So I, you know, began to then try to figure out, well, how am I going to live with it? And I knew marrying wasn't the answer, but I also wasn't the point of really accepting who I was. So I just stayed in the closet and, you know, thought, well, I'll just be, you know, celibate for the rest of my life and obey the rules, which is, you know, really destructive, because human beings need, we just need the warmth of even being known, so much less, you know, the warmth of physical affection and touch and holding, which we all need, but we need to be seen as who we are and accepted, and when that's not there, it's very painful stuff.
I think that's true.
And then you try to do this stupid change stuff to people, it's further self-alienating, and it often leads to significant depression in people, and in some cases, it's led to suicide. So if we really care about people, we need to help them, as Wayne was saying, to live an integrated life, live with integrity, live their truth.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's what people, you know, will someday hopefully be more open about it. Are you familiar with a friend of mine, Chuck? He sent me this. He said he's been to this church. It's called the Cathedral of Hope.
I've not been there, but I know of it. Yeah, so a former speech writer for one of the Buchanan, Pat Buchanan, was the fellow that got that whole thing started there after he came out and, you know, accepted who he was.
Well, because here it says homosexuality and Christianity coming out resources, and it says it's okay to be gay because God loves you just the way you are.
Mm-hmm.
And it says it's in our Judeo-Christian society, the documents collectively known as the Bible serve as the primary guide on most issues. It's interesting that many Christians take literally the references to homosexual acts while interpreting other texts with great flexibility. One person reported listening to a nationally known woman speak in her campaign against homosexuality. She spent quite a bit of time quoting impressively from Leviticus. The listener accepted much of what the speaker said until he realized that, by Levitical standards, the crusader herself had broken many biblical laws. She spoke in a church. She taught men. She was wearing a dress made of cotton and polyester, and others that was probably unaware. What does the Bible really say about homosexuality? Actually, very little. Most significantly, Jesus said nothing at all. Considering the relatively small amount of attention the Bible pays to the subject, we must ask ourselves, why is this such a volatile issue? Other subjects about which the scriptures say a great deal, like judgment, pride, hypocrisy, receive much less passionate attention. Before looking at specific passages, it's important to note that everyone understands the scriptures based on and through the light of what they've been taught. The Bible was not written in a cultural void, and many of its instructions and laws are simply classified as less relevant today. So, for instance, like prohibition against eating pork. Nowhere
right.
does the Bible actually address the idea of persons being lesbian or gay. The statements
mm-hmm.
are,
That's
without
right.
exception, directed to certain homosexual acts. Early
right.
writers had no understanding of homosexuality as a psychosexual orientation. The truth is relatively a recent discovery. The biblical authors were referring to homosexual acts performed by persons they assumed were heterosexuals. And it goes on and on. But, I mean, it's very encouraging to see a church that's like this.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think there's a lot of them like this. That's the whole thing. I don't
well,
think most
no.
of them would be that. Right?
By comparison to all the mega, I call them the mega churches or big box evangelical churches that are out there,
mm-hmm.
Most are not affirming of gay and lesbian people. Yeah. No, it's changing, but we're not there yet. We have long ways to go. Long ways to go. Yep.
I don't think it'll ever change. And I'm going to tell you why. When I look
okay.
at the world today, I really feel that things go backwards instead of forward. And I'm really disappointed in the way the world is going today, with so much terror and ignorance and unacceptedness. I saw a video the other night in Syria with the ISIS group, and they took two men who were gay. I don't know if you saw this video. And they put a bag over them, and then they took them to the top of the roof and threw them overboard, you know, because they were gay. And... you know, I just feel that there's just so much hatred there, not just for gays, but for look what they're doing to the Japanese people today, to the Jewish people, to anybody who doesn't agree with what they're doing.
To women. I mean, if they don't want to stay
terrible.
Ignorant, be educated. Yeah, right.
All right. They went and, you know, shot that young lady who was in school. How about the ones in Uganda where they kidnapped all those girls in school?
Right.
For,
yep.
you know, the terrorists and took them all to be forced raped. You know, I think
right.
there's something really wrong with humanity.
Yep.
And that's why I don't think we're ever going to see a lack of hatred or prejudice. I think people are just getting worse.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's worse. I mean, when I was born in the aftermath of World War II, and I didn't think there could be anything worse than the Nazi Party. That took over all these different countries, killing all the, you know, Jews, the gays, the Catholics, the priests, the nuns. Like, you think, what could ever be worse than that? But then you take a look at today, you know, with this group ISIS, and how they're just hanging Christians, how they're throwing homosexuals off of roofs, you know, anybody who they can catch who's from outside their area, you know, they're beheading them. I mean, I don't remember seeing that kind of violence growing up. Did you?
No, not that kind of violence at all. It was that sort of thing was a very bizarre aberration if we saw anything like that. And now it's making the news every time you turn around. We've got genocide that we're seeing, or this horrific kind of terrorist behavior. Yeah.
And I think it's very depressing.
I saw an interesting political cartoon. It said that ISIS has as much to do with Islam at its core as, and then they showed a picture of the Ku Klux Klan, has to do with the core of Christianity. And from my study of world religion, that's true. And so, but the, one of the side sort of collateral damage that's done is it continues to breed hostility between people whose religion is about peace, but all they know of each other is the aberrations of that. I'm so grateful that right here in Nashville, we've got rabbis and imams and pastors who are all meeting together for a symposium entitled We Are Not Enemies, to work on mutual understanding and cooperation and kindness in our society, just right here. That is an encouraging thing in the midst of so much discouragement.
That's very encouraging. I just do feel like Wayne was saying a lot of times that religion just perpetrates these kind of crimes by keeping people down, right?
It's the perversion of the core of any one of the three Western religions, Islam, Christianity, or Judaism. It's a perversion of the core that ends up with these all of this intolerance. You know, one of the things I wanted to point out when you were quoting Leviticus and or talking about the woman quoting Leviticus and, you know, against homosexuality, just the word homosexual is not in the Bible. It's not in there. It was a term that was coined in the 19th century by a German psychologist named Benkert, B-E-N-K-E-R-T. Was the first one to use that term, but yet you can see many translations of the scripture where two different Greek words are rendered homosexual. But the concept of a person as being erotically and affectionately oriented towards a member of their own sex is a very new concept in the time that the Torah, the first five books of Moses were written, the time later when the scripture in the Christian tradition were written. It was just assumed that everybody was straight, as we would say it today. They didn't even have a word for the difference. And so, as your guest was saying earlier, Wayne was saying earlier, what happens is, people read back into their scripture from today rather than reading out of the scripture in its historical context. And they end up using it as then a pretext for whatever it is that their little fear-based bailiwick is all about. So I encourage people, use your head, ask questions.
I think people have just, you know, there's a certain kind of person that's just not going to ask. And they just kind of follow the leader or follow wherever they're being led. And, you know, I think a lot of this comes out of dysfunctional growing up to start with. I think that I've seen generation after generation of dysfunction. Like today I was with someone who, you know, her ex-husband was, and not a gay, just, you know, straight ex-husband was very dysfunctional. But he came from a family of 18 children. And when you have 18 children, how functional do you think the family can be? It wasn't very functional because the father was an alcoholic and always beating up on the mother. So you produced a whole generation of people who are now dysfunctional, like, because almost all of those 18 children have something, any, you know, addiction of some kind. And then they're having babies and, you know, it just keeps going on and getting worse.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have problems today that we didn't have. I'm not saying there weren't drugs 100 years ago, but people weren't doing drugs like they do them today.
Mm-hmm.
Would you say that's true?
I think you're right. Yep, I think you're right. Yep. Absolutely.
I think drugs have really destroyed our culture. And, you know, I think technology has destroyed it to a certain degree. People don't have the same kinds of conversations they used to have. Families aren't brought up to, you know, have conversations. You know, everybody's on a cell phone or texting or playing video games. You know, it's not like when I was younger, we didn't have those kind of distractions. You know, we had a better communication skills with people.
Right.
You know, I'm not trying to make it, you know, all negative, but the truth is that, you know, people are failing today.
I'm amazed at people who... you know, they'll be out on a date and they'll both be on their cell phones texting. And it's like, do you think that's going to hold a relationship together?
I don't get that either. I mean, here you are dating and you're both. Yeah, I just don't understand it. But once again, I think these are things that, you know, I won't be around in 50 years, but I think it'll be a very different society than we see today, don't you?
Oh, I think it's going to be very different. Yeah.
I know, and I think I'm really happy I won't be here to see it. I would have never said that when I was younger. I would say, oh, I can't wait to see all the changes and stuff. But
you
know, things just going in this direction, I'm not sure that I'd want to see it.
I know what you mean. And I
see you're gonna
that
have to
we're
see it.
At
you're
the end of
one.
Another hour, my friend.
Doesn't the time go fast?
Quickly. It does. Does.
So I do want to tell people Dr. Brian Hoover is the best when you're having problems, when you need a therapist, when you need to straighten out your head, when you need to get a new direction in life, when you want to confirm what you're going through, that you're not crazy, and figure out a way to get out of it. This is the man who can guide you through with the best of everything. You know, he's a professional therapist. He lives this life of authenticity, and he'll help you do it too. So if you need Dr. Hooper, you can find his website. Give them the website, Brian.
www.drbrianhooper.com.
That's BRIANHOOPER.com. And,
right.
Of course, you can go to gayhusbands.com website under resources, and you'll get to see the link to Brian there also. So, Brian, I want to thank you so much for joining me every month. Always making it a healing night for people who are listening. You know, I appreciate you so much.
Hey, thank you. My privilege and a pleasure to be with you always, my friend.
Before you hang up, how's the weather in Nashville?
Well, you know, today wasn't too bad. It was a little cool, but nice, and we had a really nice days before. And 8 more weeks to spring. That's all I know. I'm waiting.
So you're not expecting the same 12 inches of snow that we're getting here tomorrow?
No. A couple days ago, we got a dusting. It was all of 2 inches, and it's gone by the afternoon. So, yeah.
I know. That's the kind of snow I like, the one that comes and goes within the same day.
There you go.
Well, in the meantime, everybody be safe in this terrible storm. A lot of people are being locked in, stuck in. And we'll be back here next week. And, Brian, I'll be back with you here next month. You know, I love you.
I look forward to it. Love you too, Bonnie. Thanks for all of your
all right.
good work. We appreciate you.
Thanks, okay, Brian. Bye. Same here.
Bye, Bonnie.
All right. Good night, everybody.
Good night.